we thought that maybe the best way to encourage people is to make them enthusiastic about the future rather than very scared.
My name is Patrick Hübscher, and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models. He studied mechanics with a focus on product development and machine design. After years of consulting, he worked for Sony and recently in product compliance. He has been vice president of sustainability at Husqvarna Group for over 3 years. Welcome, Kalle.
Thank you.
Kalle, as a first personal question, when and where do you personally get your best ideas?
Oh, when and where? I think I have a tendency to get good ideas in two different ways. First one is probably when I'm in a room, typically a meeting room where there is a lively discussion going on, where people are sharing thoughts back and forth, being very like brainstormy. That's the typical like creative environment I like. Another thing I realized is I often take my bike to work. It's like a 40-minute bike ride, and during that, like those minutes, I process things in my head, and I can come up with some really good ideas. Mainly connected with how to present things, how to put things in a document, how to report things, but. That's something that I have reflected on and noticed. Kind of a funny thing.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that. For me, it's the same with running. So I have the same thinking about ideas, presentations. Yeah. But today we want to talk about ideas, in particular circular ideas at the company level at Husqvarna. You developed a program to identify and create new circular innovations. Yes. Why did you start that program in the first place?
Well, so it was back in 2019. We were just about to start the strategy process for our next chapter in our sustainability endeavors. We had, at that time, we were already on a journey towards the end of 2020 with some targets. It was five different targets set up for different sustainability topics, more addressed as challenges, really. So for us in the Husqvarna Group, that was early on in our sort of maturity journey on really taking on sustainability. So it was more like, yeah, we have to live up to this. We have to be a good citizen and so. But in the end of 2019, we thought that in the next strategy cycle, I mean, stretching from early 21 to the end of 25, we really wanted to have it more opportunistic and to be incentivized with business opportunities from the start to really turn this sort of dystopia picture that we see every day on climate. And of course, that is very true. It is urgent and all that. But we thought that maybe the best way to encourage people is to make them enthusiastic about the future rather than very scared. So, I mean, obviously, we had our carbon or decarbonization journey as part of this, because we are a company that still develop and sell fossil fuel combustion power engines. So we're a big part of the like the pollution problem and the CO2 emission problem. So that was a clear one. The second one was really this about resource scarcity, and we wanted to it was very new for us. We didn't know how to deal with it. We know there was, we could see some tendencies that even for us, there were scarce materials which were in practice becoming more expensive or hard to get to get those materials when we wanted them. So it was becoming a practical problem as well. But more than that, we thought it is interesting with our range of products because we are working with a lot of garden and park related products lawnmowers and brush cutters and hedge trimmers, etc.
Right.
And the typical customer is a residential, private villa owner that has a shed, and everyone, all neighbors with their 1,000 square meter property has one of these.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a big underutilization of our products, and they could be very, very suitable for sharing, or at least finding some way to utilize these products in a better way. And what if we could combine that fact with a completely new sort of revenue stream that is more related to services or utilizing these products in a better way to consume less material. So that's how it all started and how we came up with this idea that we want to have a target that is really encouraging innovation around circularity. Because honestly, also we were, and I would say still are quite immature when it comes to actually using recycled materials and so in our products, because there are so very high quality demands. They have to be sturdy. They have to be very low variances, etc. So for that reason, we are using a lot of virgin materials, and we didn't really want to start in that end, in the recycling end, because we thought, there might be an even bigger lever if we start higher in the sort of, in the hierarchy, start addressing the demand rather than working with trying to recycle the materials out. Yeah, it was a very long answer to your question, but that's how we start.
Yeah, I mean, it's essential, and I have one follow-up question on that one, because I do think it's important. Do I understand it right that back then in 2019, the senior management already had a shared view of the future? Probably not so precise, but a bit more blurry. A shared view of the future will somehow live in a different world, and that business generation and value delivery will look different, because doing such a program also as part of a strategy normally requires some level of senior management buy-in.
Well, honestly, I'm not so sure that when we started this, that was insights that the senior manager had. What they did have was that they were starting to sense the pain from scarce materials and higher raw material prices and so.
Mm-hmm.
So honestly, it was at that time more driven from a pure business perspective. The appetite for these kind of ideas were honestly more coming from that then. No one, of course, I mean, we had a big sort of interest in when we deep dive in into this, and actually at that point of time we also had a collaboration project with one of the bigger universities in Sweden, the KTH, Royal Institute of Technology, and we started to sort of, well, upskill ourselves with what is really circularity. What does it really mean? Mm-hmm. Because we were new to this, and so were our senior management. So I think with them as an external trust, a very trusted partner, it was also a little bit easier to get the ears from the senior management that this is something that we have to look into. We also actually before this strategy or the targets was set, we had already done more of a proof of concept where we built a rental box that we placed on one of the bigger shopping malls here, where you could rent our tools rather than buying them. It was very much an early attempt to, okay, what about some kind of a large scale renting model for our products, and that one has played out very well. It was a lot of sort of media attention to this proof of concept. So that also maybe I think increased the appetite from the senior management on building a circular innovation target as such, and to come up with more ideas. Not saying that sort of product idea, that proof of concept was showing great profitability, because it was definitely not. It was that is one of the things we have learned also, that is it's so hard to get the scale and get finally the numbers to turn black and not red.
I know that one. Let's talk a bit more about the circular innovation program you developed. Can you describe that briefly?
Yes, it's basically a program that is a simplification of like the traditional or the commonly known Ellen MacArthur principles with our strategies. We simplified it and made it more like relevant for us. So we create the sort of a strategy concept of five different R's, where the first, or there is this hierarchical like level. So starting from the top, it's about producing demand at the one, meaning that we are sort of ideas that significantly remove the need for materials to be extracted at all. Mm-hmm. So for us, that would mean to like dramatically do the work of, I don't know, lawn cutting or hedge trimming in a completely different way, using another kind of solution. So that's reduced demand. And then, of course, when those materials are extracted, well, then it's about letting them stay in the economy. So the second R would be reuse. The third R is repair. Fourth is remanufacture or refurbish. And the final one only is recycle. So it was also, we really wanted to make it visually understandable that recycle is the last resort only, because that was the common sort of perception in our R&D teams, that okay, we're going to work with circularity, so we have to use recycled material. And of course that was good, because we're still not very good in using recycle. We can do much more, but we also want to start up in closer to the actual material source and starting one or using them out. So that was one key like piece of this, starting with this 5R strategy. That should, I mean, both be part of the criteria on how to quantify innovations as circular, but also to give examples and give sort of a toolbox to our innovators on think about these things? I mean, think about reuse. Is there any way you could, with the current product or system, that you can make sure that it gets to be used by more people?
Right.
So that was one. The other one was to, okay, we understood that we have, if we want to, we really want to talk about innovation. It is part of our DNA. We have been an innovative company for almost 340 years. We have done a lot of like technology leaps in the past. So to do innovations, to break new grounds, that's something that it, I mean, we have to define it. So basically we were setting criteria for value proposition novelty, that mm-hmm. if we claim this is an innovation, we have to be able to prove that no one has thought about this before, that it truly is a value proposition novelty. So that was more on the innovation part. And the third sort of pillar of the criteria was that, okay, after all, it does have to make business sense.
Right.
So we have to, at least on the desktop business case, be able to show that within time, this will be profitability. It has to make profitable sense in terms of business also, because otherwise it will, in our environment, it will die anyway. If we are not making money out of this, it will not fly, basically. So those were like the technical, if you may say so, the criteria. And then also we understood that, okay, all these, the five R's, the value proposition novelty and the business potential, they are actually all subjective. It will be very hard to do clear definitions. So in order to do this evaluation, and also in order to help nominees that are like applying for this award, this internal award, we need a committee that are mm-hmm. with like, people with knowledgeable people in all areas like circularity, value proposition, and business potential, and to sit down and have a process on how to evaluate and qualify these products. That was the second part of, if we had the criteria, then we have the committee that mm-hmm. We decided should meet every quarter and do that sort of evaluations. And then the final piece was really a funneling model where you have an application process where all different innovators in our company and even externally actually can come with ideas on circular innovations, and then in steps take them down as nominees, qualify them as nominees, and finally as circular innovations, and then to have that as a tool for this circular innovation committee to look into and pick and choose ideas from.
Okay.
So that's in brief the model: criteria, committee, and the funder model.
Okay, and then you basically communicated that to the employees and to external stakeholders, that they can come up with ideas meeting these criteria, and in that way start, let's say, the innovation process in that area.
Yes, exactly, and that's how it all started. So it was more of a, as I say, a launch. We actually started already the first year. We also went externally. We did an open innovation challenge for startups through some startup like networks that we were belonging to. We started it only in Sweden, but the year after that, we did it also globally, but that was also a way to encourage people and kickstart the whole event. So it's we labeled it Sustainovate Open.
Yeah,
it was like an open competition. It was, of course, also a lot of communication internally that we have had started this and in order to trigger people to come up with ideas and, okay. And there was a prize. There was actually a small prize sum, or what do you say, a prize that with the external competition we released a small fund for making a proof of concept, so that also that innovators could actually get some help of realizing proof of concept of their idea. So okay. That was also part of that.
And in hindsight, what would you say, what is the main motivation for people inside or outside the company to come up with ideas? Was it the price? Was it the fund? What was it?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I think no, I'm not sure, and I can answer that fully. I think it's equally all of those things. I mean, the recognition to have. No, honestly, I think that the main driver is still to come up with a very good idea that also makes business sense, that will be the next blockbuster, or at least that will take off and become a product or a service that we actually do make money out of. I mean, I think that is the true answer. I mean, we are innovative, but also with a big business sense. I mean, no one can really, or I should have put it. Yeah, I would say that rather that than the sort of personal recognition.
Okay.
That, yeah, I don't know if I make myself clear. But
it's about having impact also. To some extent.
It's about having impact, yes. And I think we actually have the perfect circular innovation that was like, it was innovated 25 years ago. And that is the of course, we do not count that one, but our robotic lawnmower, it's a fantastic example of a great product that is a circular benefit. Because what we compare to is the traditional either push petrol lawnmower or the ride-on mowers, where you basically you have a big heavy metal sheet where you once every second week you send it out, you don't cut your lawn, you tear off the grass because it's long and this it's not a sharp blade, you just tear it off. And it does consume a lot of energy for both that reason and then also for the riders to transport a human being.
Yeah.
So it becomes a very heavy material, dense product and doing a quite poor work actually cutting lawn. Yeah. So the whole innovation with the robotic lawnmower is actually in the way it cuts the grass with it does it with a low energy pivoting razor blade. So you do it every day. For that reason, you can do it in small tiny bits.
True.
That also happens to refertilize the lawn and nurture the lawn. So the result is great. You get a much nicer lawn that is like healthier, at least in terms of how it grows and how it looks, and it's always cut because this. I mean, you have it as an automated solution, so it can done whatever. So that was we had this like role, what to say, this guiding star in terms of a product that everyone wants to invent the new robotic lawnmower or to do the cutting of the lawn in a completely different way. And of course, that was a big inspiration in terms of
So I want to come back to the step of the committee and selecting the ideas. You mentioned one of the three perspectives is also the business viability. On what basis do you assess these ideas, especially since you said at the beginning one of the triggers to start this program was also that you guessed that in the next years the material prices will rise and there will be a different business environment. And do you acknowledge that in your assessment? Do you say, okay, we need to assess these new circular ideas also on new KPIs and new measures that we expect to be valid in 5 to 10 years? Or do you, what I think most companies do you assess, let's say, the ideas for a future based on let's say, KPIs and criteria of the present or past?
No, I wouldn't say that the KPIs in terms of what might be, I don't know, raw material prices, what might be the accessibility of certain limited scarce resources and metals and minerals. No, that was not part of the business case criteria. So it was rather looking at the current KPIs for business profitability and or business viability. One thing we do though is that we have a matrix. We did sort of a matrix, a two-axis matrix, where we laid out the R's, meaning reduce, reuse, repair, remanufacture, recycle, on the x-axis, and then on the y-axis we have the three levels of value propositionality, starting from low, which is maybe not new to the world, but at least new to Husqvarna Group. So sort of commonly known things like recycled plastics in our products. We hadn't done that at all. And then we, during this period, we came up with a complete new range of watering and hand tools for private gardens through the Gardena brand with 65% recycled plastic material. So that was one example of that.
Nice.
Very low value proposition novelty, but it still was new to us, and it was in the recycle R strategy. So what we have done now over the years is that we have plotted where the innovations end up in this matrix. So meaning in this case we had a recycled low value proposition novelty idea. And then maybe another idea was more on reduced demand, but rather a medium. It was actually something that is new to our industry. Something that has never been done in our industry. And it was more on reducing the need for a product. And then, of course, there is a high value proposition. And when we started plotting the ideas, we realized, okay, there is a tendency to go for the easy with the recycling. So we want to start limiting that and now encourage so that we actually do get a spread of ideas. Because this is also a learning journey for us. I mean, it's very much a learning journey. This is the whole intention with this target is not to, it's honestly not actually to drive less virgin materials. It's more about changing mindset that new business models, new ways of doing things is what we need to aim for. More like a disruptive sort of mindset setting.
Right.
If you can. Yeah. So for that reason, we also want to make sure that we have scores, we have ideas in all five R's, and that they are from low to high. That's something that we are also doing in the committee.
Okay.
And then I mean, maybe it's early to say, but I would think that in come 2025, and we are preparing our next sort of circular target circular economy oriented sustainability target, we probably would not go for the same setup, because hopefully we have changed the minds of all to do this. We have learned, and we have the toolboxes to innovate more circularly. And then now at that stage, maybe it will be more about measuring the material efficiency, the true material efficiency, or a combination of the both. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And do you already see a change of the ideas? And overlooking the last 3 years, I guess there might have been some obvious ones at the beginning. And do the ideas now get more sophisticated? Or at some point, I could also imagine that at some point you run a bit out of ideas. How is the situation today compared to the beginning?
I think the inflow in our fandom, it has been, I don't know if we have seen a peak. Definitely it has been increasing, the inflow, as we have gone about this. We are seeing now tendencies for some kind of a fatigue or a plateauing effect, I would say. We still get ideas in the inflow. And of course, we need more idea. Since our target is 50 approved circular innovations, we need way more ideas than 50, because some of them will not pass the tests.
Yeah.
But it seems like it's leveling out. The projection is if we do that, we will looking to be able to reach the target, but it's not looking like we will slam dunk it. But it's looking good. I think we see a tendency also, like I said, that the quick wins are in the recycle basket, even though we have a lot of good innovations also in the other four R's. But what we miss are the really like high value proposition novelty category with some where we really want to have like new groundbreaking innovations.
Yeah.
And that is natural, because it's harder, of course.
Yeah.
And not only is it harder to come up with the idea, it's also because still in order to qualify, you need to have some sponsor internally, like your manager believing in this idea in order to get time to work with it, because you are, after all, dependent also on your the rest of your organization, right? It's not so that it's very rare that we have a single like individual coming up with an idea and bringing it to the circular innovation, because then it's just too immature, I would say. So you have to have vetted it with your colleagues, you have to have done the business case, and then you need to involve more people. And then I think there is a risk that you realize that maybe you didn't think of all the parameters you had to think of,
then you have to step on the bicycle and get some new ideas. Yeah.
Exactly. that's actually a very good point you make there. I think that's something that we have not tried so much. We have done these challenges, these open innovation challenges, but also internal innovation challenges, but we haven't really done think tanks. We haven't we haven't tried that. That's something that I would like to try to have, I don't know, a couple of days per year where you invite you have this hackathons where you more or less lock in people to, okay, you have, do not get out of this room until you have the new way of felling a tree or with a dramatically lower material use than for a chainsaw, like something like that. That would be really cool to do. Maybe we need to do it. Yeah. Still have 2 years left, so
sounds good. Maybe some listeners have some ideas.
I
can already see the circular hackathon. Sounds fun. One more question about the committee that decides about the ideas. Who's part of it, and do you rotate?
So those who are part, we have our circular lead, which is, since I'm belonging to a group function and we have a centralized sustainability office where we also have the circular expertise. So that we participate, and then we have our three business divisions with sustainability responsibles or sustainability leads in those three divisions.
Yeah.
Then we also have people from that are more from the product, like representatives from the product departments. Not seldom they are. It's usually one or two people in addition to the sustainability responsibles, and not seldom are they more into servitization and digitalization. And then we also have some external support from, we have a research institute, which is a good, they are very skilled in circular economy principles. And we also have this academia connection with KTH still. Mm-hmm. So that we involved in this committee. We have, there has been rotations, but more related to like reorganizations.
Okay.
And so it's not so that we have a rotation system as a built. There has been a rotation, a natural rotation.
Yeah. I was asking about that one because I can imagine that being part of that committee in itself is quite a learning journey. If we talked about transforming the organization and the mindset, people in that committee probably benefit the most.
Yeah. But lately we have had a discussion on, okay, so of course it's the obvious innovations are the external, like the products and the business models that we have been focusing on, because that's, again, it's business driven. But also we have realized, and we do have some candidates now also on internal processes, since we have a quite big manufacturing, operations in our company, there are several manufacturing processes could be improved with a more like circular approach. So, and we have said that those are also welcome. It doesn't have to be a paying customer for the actual solution. Those could very well be internal process circular innovations. We are doing that. And that has been a very big learning. How do you qualify something being an innovation, or what's the threshold between an innovation and more of a continuous improvement?
That
is very hard, and it's very simple.
And then I guess at the end it's one thing is terminology, and the other thing is getting things done and improving. Yeah, and then it's probably not so important.
Exactly.
What it qualifies, yeah. Of course, knowing that in bigger organizations, you need to put things in boxes, yeah. Otherwise, people can't
handle
it. I want to approach more or less the last topic, and this is about what happens after you selected an idea.
Yeah, after the circular innovation has been approved, it is publicly communicated as approved, and we as part of this system, we kind of leave it to survive because one of the criteria, the final criteria, is that it has to have, well, I said that it doesn't have to have a paying customer. Actually, that is a requirement. It has to have a paying customer. At least one unit of this proof of concept of the, or this like product has to be sold. But the why I mentioned that for the internal processes is that you might have I don't know, in your injection molding, you might come up with a way of circulating cooling water. Mm-hmm. And that could be qualifying as a circular innovation, as one example. That, of course, that production, manufacturing machine produces products that eventually will be sold. So at the end of the day, we can qualify even internal processes. But that's a little bit the point, that it has to be able to survive commercially on its own. So we as part of this circular innovation target, we let it go. And that might be right or wrong. It would be great to do follow up on all these. Well, year to date, we have 22 approved circular innovations, and we are aiming for 50. So it would be very, very interesting to follow them.
And
see how many of these that actually will survive commercially. My guess, though, is that it is still fewer than we would like. It might be less than 50%, might be, I don't know, 30%. This is a guess now, but that's the way it is with innovation. The majority of the ideas don't survive. And that's just a fact we have to live with. And I think in this case, we are also exploring. I think, especially when you look into sharing and rental models, it's so very hard to change people's behavior. This thing with buying a lawnmower or a hedge trimmer, even though you know your neighbor, you might even have borrowed it from your neighbor, and that is what sort of tells you, okay, I should buy my own.
Yeah.
But instead of talking to your neighbor and asking, maybe we should share this one. Maybe we should ask 4 or 5 other neighbors if we should share, and then we could buy professionally graded lawnmower together. It seems to be so hard to break these like norms on how you consume, and I think that's the biggest hurdle for circular economy, that we are with this thing. And I'm definitely one of those people that I always think that if I find a good product, I try a good product, I'm thinking, oh, I want to own one. I want to buy one for myself and have it in my shed. It's stupid. That's how we have been taught.
But on the other hand, I really love your program you just described, and also the fact that you started so early, I'd say, because many companies are just now starting to think about circular innovation. And you already have like 3 to 4 years of experience in creating a funnel of new ideas. And of course, another thing is implementing it. Mm. And there might be internal barriers, be it the organizational structure, the mindset, the capabilities, and there are external barriers. But you need to start, and the way you started and also the point in time you started, it's, I think, already quite impressive. So, and increases the odds that Husqvarna will be first in discovering and implementing a substantially new innovation. Yeah, that for sure.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. And I can acknowledge what you say, because we're doing a lot of benchmarking with maybe not direct well, we do that as well, but also with other like multinational industry peers in Sweden, and we do get a lot of recognition and praise for that. Wow, this is a new approach. That's we want to. Can we borrow the methodology? Of course, we are trying to share this as much as possible, because we really.
Yeah. Thanks, Kalle, for sharing it also with us, and looking forward to the results in the next years.
Thank you, Patrick. It's been a pleasure to participate.
My name is Patrick Hübscher, and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models.